Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Well, first of all, ladies and gentlemen, I want to express how happy I am that the Apollo astronauts returned to Earth this week, both for their own safe recovery and the fact that I couldn't find any more songs about the moon. And now, news of our friends, freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia, the land of 4,000 princes. LIV Golf, which shook up the professional golf world when it was created 5 years ago, forced major changes on the PGA Tour, may be playing its final rounds. The deep-pocketed Saudi Public Investment Fund, the PIF, has bankrolled the upstart league. Now it's slashing funding. Officials from the breakaway tour were summoned to an emergency meeting in New York this week. That's according to a report in The Telegraph. According to the Financial Times, an announcement could come very soon. Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund is on the verge of cutting its support for LIV Golf, said the FT. Huge losses have been racked up since being set up 5 years ago. There were no LIV Golf officials in Mexico City for this week's tournament. A pre-tournament news conference was canceled hours before it was scheduled to begin. And I guess all the bone saws will be returned. Hello, welcome to the show.
Here you go again, making a way for me. Even when I was too blind, to see. Thinking I knew too much, getting in my own way. Hey. Almost lost my life, but you made no death behavior. And I don't understand why, cause I know I don't deserve it. I fell so many times, but you still think I'm worth it. And I couldn't earn your love, even if I tried. So I'll just lift my hands, lift them to the sky, yeah.
I can't give you enough, you keep showing up for me.
For me.
The unmerited favor
you freely bestow
on me. Mercy.
Let me say a little more. Been in some tough spots when I thought it was the end. And I'm not talking one time, I mean over and over again. Here you go, I'm showing up just in time. Taking my hand and saying it's gonna be alright. I've seen so much loss, but I'm still here. The grace you've shown to me, it makes me shed a tear. And if I think about it too long, it starts to get too much. There's no comparison, there's no greater love.
I can't thank you enough, you keep showing up for me.
For me. Oh,
the unmerited favor you freely bestow on me.
Mercy, I thank you for your mercy. Oh, your mercy,
I don't
deserve your mercy.
I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Keep showing up.
For me.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this right here, this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time for news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Well, you know the next Olympics is scheduled to be in Los Angeles, just a couple of years. The local Rapid Transit System, Rapid Metro, requested nearly $2 billion in federal funds for its plan to get people around during the Olympics. It expected to receive it, but the Trump administration's budget, beginning of this month, excluded it. Without those funds, the mayor's proclamation of a no-car games is impossible, this according to City Watch LA. To create a bus fleet suitable for the games, it must temporarily acquire, operate, and store nearly 1,750 additional buses, number scaled down from 3,000. At the same time, thousands of operators, mechanics, and support personnel have to be hired, trained, state certified. It is a shock beyond Metro's ability to absorb it. Without these funds, LA's transportation system could hit the breaking point, quote, without the full level of funding requested, the complete scope of the game's enhanced transit system would not be feasible, as the cost of operating this temporary system exceeds Metro's available operating resources, according to the agency. But wait, there's less. California lawmakers passed legislation in 2017, agreeing to cover up to $270 million of losses related to the Olympics after LA covers the first $270 million. That's in case a deficit occurs. That legislation directed the governor to execute a contract solidifying the state's commitment. More than 8 years later, that contract hasn't been signed. The state's guarantee is potentially huge importance to LA, according to LAist. The city took on a huge risk when it agreed to be the financial backstop for the Olympics. That was necessary in order to get the bid to be the host city. If LA 28, the private nonprofit running the games, winds up with a deficit exceeding $540 million, that could never happen. The city is responsible for the rest. When asked about the contract, the governor's office had a spokesperson say the state is currently in talks with LA 28 and the city about contract language. The lack of a signed state contract could trigger alarm bells in city government. Some officials are already upset that another key contract remains unsigned. That's an agreement between LA and LA 28, the private outfit promoting the games, over compensating the city for extra services it's going to provide for the Olympics. Your police overtime. That contract was scheduled to be signed more than 6 months ago. City officials say that if that contract isn't airtight, it could leave LA with millions in unexpected costs. Referring to that unsigned contract, a member of the city council warned the CEO of LA 28 in a public letter last week that the coming Olympics could, quote, bankrupt, unquote, the city. But it's worth being bankrupt. After all, it is the Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the atom. First 5 or 10 planned nuclear reactors, new ones, will almost certainly receive loans from the U.S. Energy Department. That's what the Energy Secretary told lawmakers in a hearing this week. The felon-in-chief signed an executive order last year calling for 10 new large nuclear reactors to be under construction by 2030 and for the NRC to speed approval. You know, the commission doesn't have to think about it. There are currently no approved plans to build new large reactors, this according to Reuters, but the U.S. government struck partnership in October with Canadian owners of Westinghouse. Oh, they sold it, huh? Cameco and Brookfield Asset Management. They aim to build at least $80 billion in reactors. That plan was announced after Trump said during a trip to Asia that Japan will provide up to $332 billion to support infrastructure, including construction of Westinghouse reactors and small modular reactors. Last U.S. reactors came online in 2023 and 4 built at a site in Georgia. They were delayed by about, 7 years, cost about $17 billion more than budgeted, despite securing billions in loans from self-same Energy Department. during the first Trump administration. But the story gets bigger and bigger. Abandoned homes, offices, and shops still dot the landscape at Fukushima in Japan in the aftermath of the accident. In that aftermath, nuclear power's future seemed bleak. Japan shut off all its reactors. But the country is now rapidly moving to restart them, according to E&E News by Politico. Artificial intelligence increases electricity demand, and foreign wars throttle natural gas supply. It's a pincers. Japan relies on natural gas for 30% of its electricity, and almost all of the gas is imported. They got no gas in Japan. The Iran wars further helped the case for nuclear, which can displace some of the liquefied natural gas that is stuck in the Strait of Hormuz. You don't want your gas stuck. This week, Japan will open its 16th reactor since the Fuk accident, and a nuclear plant run by TEPCO ran the plant during the meltdown. The former chief of Japan's Nuclear Regulation Authority said the debate over whether to go back to nuclear power took years. Quote, "After the accident, we had furious discussions," he said. "One of the most influential issues was the war in Ukraine. That country heavily, oh no, this country, Japan, heavily relied on the natural gas imported from Russia, and all the energy sources are coming from the outside," he said. Japan stopped expanding its use of Russian gas when the Ukraine invasion happened, aims become less reliant on those imports, and the Iran war risks forcing the country to cut back on its gas imports from other countries. This from a TEPCO executive. Quote, "We believe the biggest lesson learned from the Fukushima accident is that there is no such thing as absolute safety," unquote. That is so reassuring. And after decades of cancer cases and public outcry, the federal government, that's right here in this country, this week begins the long-awaited cleanup of a nuclear waste dump in Armstrong County, Pennsylvania. The site was a dumping ground for hundreds of 55-gallon drums, no base, containing radioactive nuclear waste. This week, a $500 million project to safely remove it will finally begin. And guess who's going to do the work? Yes, our old friends at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the Let Us Try people. They gave the local TV station an exclusive look at the painstaking, intensive, and expensive process to rid the site of radioactive waste. After decades of protests, cancer cases, and multi-million dollar class action settlements, the Corps begins the cleanup this week. "We're beginning active remediation," said Colonel Nicholas Millen, commander of the Corps of Engineers Pittsburgh District. Oh, that's one of their best districts. "The movement of waste material from here all the way out to Utah, where it will go into permanent storage." Doesn't say where in Utah or how it will be permanent. Quoting again the Corps, "The federal government is committed to fully remediating this site. Over $400 million has been invested. And over the next 6 to 8 years, we'll be moving at the speed of safety, very deliberately removing these materials. For decades, stretching back to the Cold War, volatile material for the U.S. military and nuclear industry was developed and enriched in the site, in the area. And the waste was stored in, see if this sounds familiar, 55-gallon drums. Now, hundreds of the drums lie buried in 10 trenches. Experts will spend the next several years removing them and the contaminated soil. And yes, more to come. Data centers need power. Nukes have it. Clean, cheap, safe. Too safe to meter, but not absolutely safe. Our friend the atom. And now,
news of the godly.
Clergy sex abuse survivors anticipated hearing testimony from Baltimore's Archbishop this week. They heard instead from other church officials at the latest hearing for the Archdiocese of Baltimore's bankruptcy case. How odd an archdiocese would go bankrupt. A federal judge heard Arguments this week on a motion filed by survivors and other creditors seeking a court-ordered freeze on the sale of parish and school properties during bankruptcy proceedings. Attorneys for the survivors said transactions continue in violation of Chapter 11 rules. They say the archdiocese is offloading assets and hiding it from creditors. The debtor, the archdiocese, said parishes and schools are a separate entity, and so the sales have nothing to do with the bankruptcy case. Parishes aren't part of the archdiocese. They're run by wind. Meanwhile, the scandal of the former Jesuit Marco Rupnik continues to grow. The Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith has kept a process open regarding him, accused by around 20 nuns and former nuns of sexual power and psychological abuses, this at the Vatican. However, neither the victims nor their lawyers have access to concrete information about the status of the procedure. The secrecy has fueled doubts about the management of the case in the Vatican, where no public explanations have been offered regarding deadlines, possible decisions, coffee. Rupnik's disciplinary history adds even more questions. The priest was excommunicated by the dicastery itself when it was led by Cardinal Ladaria. That sanction was lifted a few months later under circumstances that were never clarified. Various reports point to the decision having come from on high. No, not that high. Alluding to a possible direct intervention by Francis, the talking pope, who maintained a close relationship with the Slovenian artist Rupnik. Subsequently, he was expelled from the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, which acknowledged the existence of at least 20 victims and initiated, belatedly, a process of reparation. How do you repair victims? Even more complex is the issue of Rupnik's artistic legacy. His mosaics, present in more than 200 shrines and temples around the world, Wolf Blitzer pronunciation, remain on display in many cases without any contextualization. Like, artist is an abuser. Enjoy. The victims have insistently requested that these works be removed or at the very least accompanied by visible warnings informing them about the accusations against their author. Some dioceses have already taken measures. In Lourdes, for example, the mosaics have been partially covered. Same has occurred in other places in the United States, home of covering art. However, in Rome, the situation remains unchanged. Among the most significant works is the Redemptoris Mater Chapel in the Apostolic Palace, created during the pontificate of John Paul II, as well as a large mosaic funded with millions of euros. To date, there have been no public statements from the responsible authorities regarding the future of those works. The silence contrasts with the gravity of the accusations and the scale of the scandal. This, according to the Vatican's, to Info Vaticana. The scandal has already been covered in books and documentaries circulated in Europe. The Rupnik case raises not only questions about the conduct of a specific priest, but also about the institutional response to serious repeated complaints. Oh, I think we might know about that. News of the godly. Speaking of which, you are probably aware, ladies and gentlemen, by this time, that the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, this week delivered a speech in which he said he was sitting in church and then cited a verse, which was the focus of the sermon that day. And as I say, he recited it. And then shortly afterwards, it was discovered that that wasn't really a Bible verse. It was a speech delivered by Samuel L. Jackson in the movie Pulp Fiction. Anyway, that's in the past. Now this important message.
I'm the Secretary of War. The Holy Scriptures are full of signs of wonder and deliverance. But today I'm pleased to be sharing blessings from My favorite sign.
If you've been waiting for a podcast that is spiritual as you are, your wait is over. Welcome to Pete Hegseth's Blessed Be the Hollywood Sign. Every day, Pete will anoint your ears with a full portion of biblically inspired verse.
Almost from Ezekiel 3:17. Love means never having to say you're sorry. Inspired by Mark or Matthew. Badges, we ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges. From the parts left out of Proverbs. Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room. Could be from epistles. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
No other podcast gets you this inspired with this wealth of scripture-adjacent enlightenment. Look for Pete's new podcast, Blessed Be the Hollywood Sign, wherever you get your podcasts.
Say it's someone like Job. These go to 11.
My moon is in Virgo. My car's in the shop. My constant reminder of all that I'm not. I hear you dreaming at the top of your lungs. And I'm sitting on the back porch, thinking in tongues. I'm thinking in tongues. I got a bluebird on my shoulder. I got a monkey on my back. Existential zoo's about to give me a heart attack. All they do is argue Heidegger and Carl Jung. And I'm sitting on the back porch thinking in tongues. I'm thinking in tongues. Some folks take up serpents just to show their faith. Some people shave their heads and some folks crochet. You might think I'm sleeping, but I'm a church at one. And I'm sitting on the back porch thinking in tongues. I'm thinking in tongues. Convert. I just do what I say to do and no one gets hurt. But if you're curious, the service has begun. And I'm sitting on the back porch thinking in tongues. I'm thinking in
from New Orleans. This is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of this smart world. This one right here.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Well, there's a Chinese car maker called Seres. It's just been granted a patent for what it calls an in-vehicle toilet that slides under a passenger seat for visits, as the BBC says, to the loo while on the road. The feature is meant to satisfy users' toilet needs on long journeys, while camping, or while staying in the car. According to engineers in the patent filing this month, Seres is based in the southwest city of Chongqing. Hasn't announced any cars that have toilets. Uncertain if any will be made. They got the patent, though. Chinese electric vehicles have become increasingly packed with stuff, gimmicks, smart objects, unconventional features, is what the BBC calls it. Built-in massage seats, karaoke systems, and a fridge. Fridge in the car. This to stand out in a highly competitive market. The patent filing shows Seres plans for an onboard toilet that slides out from the bottom of a passenger seat with a push or through voice-activated commands. The loo, BBC talk, will come with a fan. No, nobody wants an autograph. And exhaust pipe to channel odors out of the car, according to the filing on China's Intellectual Property Administration. Waste, glad you asked, is collected in a tank that has to be emptied manually. That is to say, once a year. And Sweden's government is championing a renewed focus on physical books, paper, and pens in classrooms, designed to reverse, your falling literacy levels. This also from the BBC, doubling down on analog tools has drawn criticism from tech companies. No. Educators and computer scientists who argue it could impact pupils' employment prospects and even damage the nation's economy. At a high school just outside Stockholm, final year students are unpacking laptops from rucksacks and tote bags alongside items they say they used less frequently a few years ago. An image clashing with Sweden's reputation as one of Europe's most tech-savvy societies. Laptops became mainstream in Swedish classrooms in the late 2000s. By 2015, around 80% of pupils at state-funded high schools had individual access to a digital device. According to official data, the compulsory use of tablets in preschools was launched in the curriculum in 2019. To prepare even the youngest children for an increasingly digital work and private life. But the current right-wing coalition, which came to power 6 years ago, moves teaching in a different direction. The government has frequently used the slogan, "From screen to binder." It argues that screen-free lessons create better conditions for children to concentrate and develop their writing and reading skills. Since 2025, preschools are no longer required to use digital tools. Tablets are not given to children under the age of two. Capsules are, though, I think. Later this year, a ban on mobiles in schools, even for educational use, comes into force. Schools have already been allocated more than $200 million in grants to invest in, what are these things? Textbooks, teacher guides, a new curriculum designed to enforce textbook-based learning, quote, reading real books and writing on real paper, and counting with real numbers on real paper is much better if you want kids to get the knowledge they need, according to one of the officials of the government. The shift in approach followed a consultation in 2023 involving academic researchers, teaching organizations, public agencies, and municipalities. Yeah, I want my city government to... Anyway, it is. It's a new twist on a smart world. Sometimes It needs a twist. And, on a related subject,
is AI a bubble? That would be trouble, messier than stubble. Anything but delicious, it might be bubblicious.
The Maine legislature has passed the first state ban in the nation on the development of large data centers. Happened this week. The temporary measure lasts for 1.5 years, restricts the construction of new data centers that use over 20 megawatts of power. Bill goes to the governor's desk for signature. She'd previously requested an exception for a data center project on a defunct paper mill site that was rejected by state legislators. During this moratorium period, a coordinating council is going to convene to produce recommendations and guidelines to shape the future of the state's policies on large data centers. The council will include, of course, government officials, experts, and other stakeholders. $95,000 will support the activities of the council. The new Maine ban is part of a larger trend of state legislators considering bills to impose new restrictions on data centers as the public and experts express concerns about the negative economic and environmental effects of these projects. Of course, the data centers are necessary to run AI things. At least 12 other states led by Republicans and Democrats are considering similar temporary bans on these construction projects. There is, of course, a continuation of what I guess the experts call hype in the AI world. And one of the things that might serve to clarify some of that hype comes this week from the British tech journal, The Register. You've heard about Claude Code, products of the company called Anthropic. Companies have been racing to adopt and use those devices, those programs, those projects, those things. Now it has been stumbling mightily, says the Register, both in terms of cost and perceived quality. Claude was down briefly this week with a major outage, service trouble that only amplifies growing discontent from customers. In the past few months, Claude's answers have been getting less satisfactory, according to social media posts as well as issues filed on GitHub. This has occurred as Anthropic has had to take steps to reduce usage during peak hours to balance capacity and demand. To get a more objective measurement, the British tech journal The Register pointed Claude at Claude, filtered for issues that mention quality, gave it a prompt. Use open issues that mention quality concerns. Have these concerns increased lately? That was the question that Claude asked Claude Code. The answer, quote, yes, quality complaints have escalated sharply, and the data tells a pretty clear story, unquote. The analysis was rerun. The results were similar. The model said, quote, the velocity is notable. April is already at 20 plus quality issues in 13 days, putting it on pace to exceed March's 18, which was itself a 3.5 times jump over January and February baseline. Claude itself is not a reliable narrator, and just because someone or some bot has reported a concern to the Claude Code officials does not mean that the report is accurate or valid. It appears many issues are now AI-generated, a widely reported concern among open-source developers. That may be contributing to the volume of issues reported. Some of the issues Claude flagged in its analysis, a caching, caching with a C, two C's, and claims by another person in the field that Claude's responses have been getting worse. Developers have reported data loss from using Claude Code and other models. If this has occurred, no one has ruled out user error. In any event, Claude is capable of citing actual issue posts to justify its reasoning, quotes. So the general trend of a growing number of reports about quality is evident. The model points to issues like Claude Code's prediction-first behavior is dangerous on capital at-risk projects. Claude Code is unusable for complex engineering tasks with the February updates. This is Claude talking. Artificial degradation, acquisition bias, and unacceptable compute throttling for paid users, and severe quality degradation on iterative coding tasks. Somebody listening probably knows what all that means. Poor Claude. It looked so good. China's new law on AI anthropomorphism. This, ladies and gentlemen, addresses something that we've been talking about on this program. The ability of users of chatbots to form, quote, relationships, unquote, with the bots, and to take their advice. Sometimes that advice includes, I think you should commit suicide. This has happened in real life more than once. I have suggested on this program and elsewhere that there is at least plausible solution to that problem. These are machines that use the first person singular to describe themselves and their output. I think, I'm very proud of you. I like what you, all of that. There is no I there. That, in my opinion, in the opinion of this broadcast, should be cited by the Federal Trade Commission as a deceptive business practice that might stop some of that stuff. But China, as I say, has a new law on what they're calling AI anthropomorphism. It's been enacted, the world's strictest law on the topic. No AI law anywhere in the world regulates anthropomorphic AI systems with this level of detail, strictness, and concern for context-specific vulnerabilities and potential risks. This from a website run by Louisa Jarofsky, an ex-scientist in the field. Article 10 establishes that providers of anthropomorphic AI must fulfill their security responsibilities throughout the service lifecycle, sets out detailed obligations for each phase of AI development and deployment. Regarding children specifically, among the prohibited anthropomorphic AI practices is generating content for minors that causes them to imitate unsafe behaviors, induces extreme emotions, or leads them to develop bad habits, which may affect their physical and mental health. Most countries do not regulate AI anthropomorphism yet. An important reason for that is that peer-reviewed studies about AI-powered emotional manipulation and mental health harm only became available recently. So stay tuned. Well, stay tuned anyway. A new study from UCLA Health argues that today's most advanced AI systems are missing a fundamental property of human cognition. The gap could have significant consequences for AI safety. This is published in the journal Neuron. I read it for the page numbers. The paper proposes that current AI systems are missing two essential ingredients that humans take for granted: a body that interacts with the physical world, and an internal awareness of that body's own states. Your fatigue, your uncertainty, your physiological need. The researchers call this combined property, quote, internal embodiment. Quote, while there's a current focus in world modeling on external embodiment, such as our outward interactions with the world, far less attention is being given to internal dynamics, says a postdoctoral fellow at the Department of Psychiatry and Biobehavioral Sciences at UCLA. AI systems right now, he says, have no equivalent. They can sound experiential, whether they should be or not. And that's a real problem for many reasons, especially when these systems are being deployed in consequential settings, unquote. Researchers, to given example, showed leading AI models a point light display, a simple image of dots suggesting a human figure in motion. Even newborns can recognize it. Several models failed to identify the figure as a person. One described it instead as a constellation of stars. No, not Hollywood is AI a bubble. Ladies and gentlemen, you are probably, again, aware of another religious controversy that erupted this week when the felon-in-chief had posted, either by himself or by his meme desk, as they call it, a picture of himself appearing to look a lot like Jesus Christ, or as Jesus Christ is depicted in modern religious iconography, a healing or attempting to heal somebody else. It raised a lot of controversy. And he also criticized the Pope, the leader of the Catholic Church, for expressing his displeasure with war, like the church is supposed to be pro-war. Pope didn't answer, but the president is answering back.
There's a guy in Rome. He's a long, long way from home. He comes across like some kind of dope. He spouts off on war like a $20 whore. He gets away with it just because he's the Pope. Him you shouldn't cross. They say that to the boss. I just tell him, go piss up a rope. He's high up in the polls, but I rake him over the coals, make him regret that he's the Pope. Supposed to be a big deal just because he's the pontiff. Jared saw him just last week and told him, good yardiff. He always wants to fight, but he's not very bright. With my brilliance, he just cannot cope. So I suggest that you pray, maybe some other way, while I beat the holy crap out of the Pope. I know the time will come when I've defeated all the scum and no one slams me for every grope. Then I'll begin my rise into the great eternal skies. rig the next election to be Pope. Why shouldn't I be the Pope?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Well, maybe it's time to get scared again. The critical Atlantic current system appears significantly more likely to collapse than was previously thought. This is after new research found that climate models predicting the biggest slowdown are the most realistic. Well, realism is overrated, isn't it? This is from The Guardian. Scientists call the new finding very concerning. A collapse would have catastrophic consequences for Europe, Africa, and the Americas. Well, we moved to Asia. What? The Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, the AMOC, is a major part of the global climate system. It was already known to be at its weakest for 1,600 years as a result of the climate crisis. But scientists spotted warning signs of a tipping point 5 years ago. And they know that the AMOC has collapsed in the Earth's past. The Earth has a kind of a checkered past. Climate scientists use dozens of different computer models to assess the future climate. However, for the complex AMOC system, these produce widely varying results. Research combined real-world ocean observations with the models to determine the most reliable. This hugely reduced the spread of uncertainty. They found an estimated slowdown of 42 to 58% in 2100. That, says The Guardian, is a level almost certain to end in collapse. Collapse is bad, right? The AMOC is a major part of the global climate system. It brings sun-warmed tropical water to Europe and the Arctic, where it cools and sinks to form a deep return current. A collapse would shift the tropical rainfall belt on which many millions of people rely to grow their food, plunge Western Europe into an extreme set of cold winters and summer droughts, and add 50 to 100 centimeters to already rising sea levels around the Atlantic. The leader of the new research said, "We found the AMOC is going to decline more than expected compared to the average of all climate models. This means we have an AMOC that is closer to a tipping point." Professor Staffan Ramsdorf at the Potsdam Institute, more pots than dam, says this is an important and very concerning result. It shows that the pessimistic models, which show a strong weakening of the AMOC by 2100, are unfortunately the realistic ones. I'm now increasingly worried that we may well pass that shutdown tipping point where it becomes inevitable in the middle of this century, which is quite close, unquote. He's good at counting days and years, I guess. He studied the AMOC for 35 years. He said a collapse must be avoided at all costs. Quote, "I argued this when we thought the chance was maybe 5%, and even then we were saying that risk is too high, given the massive impacts. Now it looks like it's more than 50%, the most dramatic and drastic climate changes we see in the last 100,000 years of Earth history have been when the AMOC switched to a different state," unquote. Him. The AMOC is slowing because air temperatures are rising rapidly in the Arctic. Due to your global heating, that means the ocean cools more slowly there. Warmer water is less dense, therefore sinks into the depths more slowly. The slowing allows more rainfall to accumulate in the surface waters, making it less dense, further slowing the sinking and forming of an AMOC feedback loop. The system is highly complex and subject to random natural variations, making precise predictions impossible. But a major weakening is now expected by scientists. That alone could have serious impacts in the decade and decades to come. Research is published in the journal Science Advances. Human's Retreat. No, that isn't the title. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
So sorry.
Justice Sonia Sotomayor issued a rare public apology this week. She had criticized a Supreme Court colleague, Justice Brett Kavanaugh, in surprisingly personal terms during a public appearance last week. Quote, I made remarks that were inappropriate, Justice Sotomayor said in a statement. I regret my hurtful comments. I have apologized to my colleague, unquote. This is a highly unusual public mea culpa. Controversy began when the justice was asked about the administration's crackdown on immigration. She criticized Justice Kavanaugh for letting a temporary policy that allows stops of people, brief investigative stops, according to his language. She said, this is from a man whose parents were professionals and probably doesn't know any person who works by the hour or the piece like I do. She didn't mention him by name, but she did apologize to him by name. Sabrina Carpenter has apologized after the singer called a fan letting out an Arab celebration call known as a zagursha weird for the sound during her set at Coachella. She apologized for the comments she made on stage. Quote, my apologies, I didn't see this person with my eyes and couldn't hear clearly, she wrote in a post. My reaction was pure confusion, sarcasm, and not ill-intended. Could have handled it better. Now I know what a zagruta is, she continued. I welcome all cheers and yodels from here on out, unquote. The zagruta, often used by women in the Middle East and North Africa, is commonly done during celebrations such as weddings and parties. Confusion and sarcasm always mix, don't they? Dateline Knoxville, Tennessee. Organizers of the 2026 Covenant Health Knoxville Marathon issued an apology this week after errors led race participants to run an extra half mile. Quote, unfortunately, various compounding errors led to marathon and half marathon participants running beyond the turnaround point, adding approximately a half mile to the total distance, said a race spokesperson. Two course monitors assigned to the turnaround point were not present as assigned. After race officials said that the issue was caused by the lead vehicle, a statement the next day said the lead vehicle was not at fault. Quote, we take full responsibility for the issue, and we offer our heartfelt apology to everyone who is impacted. We are very sorry for the error and how it may have affected your race day experience, unquote. Dateline Elkhorn, Wisconsin, the owner of an Elkhorn car dealership, has apologized to an African-American customer after a now former salesman sent her text messages she found highly offensive. Quote, you sent a customer, a good customer at that, a text message with an ape on it. It's definitely racial, said Carolyn Word. She's purchased four cars from the Coons leadership, a dealership in the past. She received the texts late March from a salesman she'd never met. Text messages show that the interaction began when the salesman sent a gif of a waving bear asking, is this Carolyn? And asked whether she was still interested in buying a car. I actually wrote, this is an insult to ask if I'm a bear. Are you trying to be like Trump? And I did tell him I was going to report it, Word said while she was on the phone reporting the incident to a manager. The salesman sent the next gif showing a dancing ape in a bathing suit. Word said, lack of any follow-up call from the dealership manager she spoke with added to her frustration, but finally, after she hired a lawyer, the general regional manager for Coons Auto Group said it had parted ways with the employee and called Word to apologize. Quote, we feel terrible, Coons said. It was a disgusting act, and that employee is no longer with us at this time. And finally, Rama Dewaji, the wife of New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani, has apologized for harmful social media posts she made as a teenager, responding publicly after a conservative news outlet combed through her online profiles and resurfaced material, including a post in which she used an anti-gay slur. In an interview, Dawaji, an illustrator, she said she felt a lot of shame being confronted with language I use that is so harmful of others, adding, quote, being 15 doesn't excuse it. I've read and seen a lot of what others have had to say in response. I understand the hurt I caused and am truly sorry. She did not specify which comment she was referring to. Sorry for everything. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. I got to go try to get my boat through the Strait of Hormuz. I'll be back next week at the same time over these same radio stations and on your audio device of choice whenever you want it, because that's the way we roll around here. Hope you can join this program then. Didn't fall apart, but, you know, I want you to join it. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and a bunch of incredibly interesting and entertaining stuff all for you to peruse and reuse at harryshearer.com. I've also got a YouTube channel with a lot of wonderful things for you to look at. And I'm writing on Substack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans. Flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.